Welcome to Blue Collar BS, a podcast that busts the popular myth that we can't find good people, highlighting how the different generations of today, the boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z, are redefining work so that the industrial revolution that started in the U.S. stays in the U.S.
The Blue Collar BS podcast helps blue collar business owners like you build business that'll thrive for decades to come by turning that blue-collar BS into some blue-collar business solutions.
In this episode, you're going to learn that the owner is the most significant opportunity in the business, as well as the largest obstacle, that AI will not replace jobs that require your hands, that you really need to build your posse to help you out, and that self-esteem truly matters.
Our guest today is Meg Schmitz, an omnigenerational girl who lives life to the fullest. She creates opportunities for entrepreneurship for all generations. We hope you enjoy this show.
Welcome back to the show, Brad. How you doing today?
I am fantastic, Mr. Stephen Doyle. And what is going on in the Motor City world of Detroit, Michigan right now?
Well, actually, we're getting ready for draft day. The NFL draft is here in Detroit, so we're setting up for that. And you know,
we're gonna watch the Bears fail again.
Yes.
and mess Bears. Up number one pick. That will be very challenging because our guest today, before you even ask, our guest today is is a Bears fan, if I recall correctly. Are you not, Meg?
No, I'm pretty fair weather these days.
Fair weather these days. Well, there's not much to be fair weather. I can understand. So our guest today is Meg Schmitz, and she has experienced the trauma of employee turnover. She's a business owner and employer on her own right. Many ways to stop the churn, which translates into greater customer stickiness instead of business revenue and profitability. So not focus on the process, not the results, because the results will come. She's in the world of franchising, and she sees franchisers assisting their owners with recruiting strategies, which is a great benefit. But when it comes right down to it, the employee experience is driven by the diligence of the business owner to stay on the pulse of the workforce, which goes back to our last guest who said that the workforce is never the problem. The workforce never lets down the company. So, Meg, welcome to Blue Collar BS. We are excited to have you, and I can't wait to hear some of the stories and tales of success that you've been able to not only accomplish on your own, but what you've been able to accomplish for your franchisors as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to this.
Oh, so, she says it with such energy. I've been looking. Come on, Meg. I know it's a Friday afternoon.
All Let's right. go. I have been looking forward to this.
Perfect.
So, Meg, before we get started and before Brad reminds me that I forget, which generation do you fit in with or do you identify with?
Oh, interesting question. I am 61 years old, which makes me the tail end of the boomers. But in my head, I am somewhere between 36 and 39 years old.
Perfect.
So I am omnigenerational in my ability to integrate.
Awesome.
That's a new word on this show.
Omnigenerational.
My mom likes to use the word omnibibulous when it comes to her preference in wine or scotch. And she'll drink anything is basically what that means. So I'm omnigenerational when it comes to who I can integrate with.
Okay. Fair enough. That's fair awesome. Enough. So as a business owner, as the being part of many businesses over the course of your career in blue collar service, et cetera, what have you seen as the biggest success factor from the recruiting multi-generational aspect to it?
I stick with my opinion that the biggest obstacle is the owner and the biggest opportunity to create a great culture is the owner who's driving the employee experience. So every generation has its preferences. And as the owner of a business, my role is to figure out what drives my employees to come to work and provide exceptional customer service.
So one of the questions that I have been curious about, especially within the franchise world, is the opportunities that you see from blue collar space. So what opportunities, I kind of want to back this up before we get to that actually, is just the mindset. Like, what are we actually, you know, those that are kind of like thinking about, like maybe they're in the blue collar space and they're like, I can run this business better than my current employer, right? Because we see that quite a bit, and they either break out on their own and they don't do so hot, or they break out on their own and they make it. Yeah. So from a mindset perspective, what do we see from the different generations as far as strengths in ownership of business?
I don't know if it's a generational issue, frankly. Mm-hmm. I think that people who go into business ownership have a driving ambition to do it better than, to your point, my boss is such a screw up. I can do it better than he can or mm-hmm. she can. And so they want to break out and do it on their own. I don't think it's a generational thing. There's a book that I refer a lot of people to called The E Myth Revisited. Mm-hmm. Yep. E stands mm-hmm. for entrepreneur. There are a lot of people who think they can do it better. Mm-hmm. Are they really providing a better customer experience? Maybe. Are they financially astute enough to run it for profit? I mean, why get into business if you're not going to run a profit?
so many places we could go. We're not a political right. show. That's right. Thank you for reminding me that pre-show.
Yes.
So I don't know that there really is an answer. I've seen 70-year-olds screw up. I've seen 60-year-olds screw up. I've seen 30-year-olds kick ass and do a great job. Mm-hmm. So
do you see a different appetite for that risk or for that piece of it? I mean, yes, you've seen 70-year-olds go out and kick ass and make it happen. Were they 70 when they did it, or were they 30 when they started? And now you're seeing, I mean, so is there a different appetite that you're seeing, a trend at all from a generational perspective, or is it more of?
Over the last few years, particularly since the pandemic started and people were realizing that you don't have the boss over my shoulder all the time anymore. Just last week, I had a husband and wife. She's 59, he's 69. They signed their franchise agreement.
Wow.
The oldest person I worked with who signed a franchise agreement was 72, former Air Force, mm-hmm. okay. out in California. And so maybe a couple of factors that played into that is he lived in Southern California, where people tend to think younger anyway.
Yep.
And he had the discipline coming from the military. Hmm. I've also worked with, and I am working with, I'm working with a guy right now. He just turned 40, and his wife, they're not going to move forward with a business. She's very risk averse. Mm-hmm. But in talking to the young man about what does business ownership look like to him, he was very firm. No nights, no weekends. And during the working hours, he just had very particular things that he was not going to do. He was not going to do anything that had anything to do with blue collar. That mm-hmm. was hands down. That was dirty jobs. He didn't want anything to do with dirty jobs. So
interesting.
I think it's more individual than it is generational from where mm-hmm. I sit.
Okay. Well, I find that interesting, just the perspective interesting from the standpoint of, you know, how the different generations actually viewed business, right? Of, you know, your boomers and how they interacted with business, and, you know, they grind, you grind and you hustle and you get after it. Versus, you know, in your Gen X had a little bit of that, you know, like kind of like mid Gen X. And then as you get towards the millennial, it's a little bit more lax, but still the drive is there. Just depends on the parents' age and grandparents. And then you get to the millennials, which just kind of shook the crap out of everything. And then for those of us that have kids that are in that Gen Z towards Gen Alpha, right? It's just kind of like, you know, we're starting to see some of that transition back into the, I want to use my hands, I want to do things, versus the, you know, go to college, sit behind a desk, have all this debt, right? So that I find that interesting from a generational perspective on ownership values.
Yeah, the ownership values are so different mm-hmm. from the employee attitude and right. how they want to be treated as an employee I personally feel very badly for the younger people who had to come through the last few years of, because how many of are you two as parents, I don't know how old your kids are, but all of a sudden you found yourself a coach, a referee, a tutor, a full-time driver, a lot of things that as parents, we took for granted that we'd have our job and our kids would go to school and whatnot. So there are multiple generations in there of young people who were set back significantly because of the pandemic. Right. And there is just a very clear difference between the employee attitude and the employer attitude in those same generations.
Interesting.
Yeah, the big loser out of the pandemic, in my opinion, is higher education. That to me was the big, that out of all of it, which I think is also what's creating the opportunity for some of the blue collar willingness to look at things, because why would I go sit someplace in some foreign land, not a foreign land, but in a different state or a different area other than just for the experience? Great. Maybe. So college is an experience. And there are some places like doctors, lawyers, nurses, engineers, where you need to get that technical experience, but to come out and be a, you know, an estimator planner, a project manager, a lot of that just, nobody's teaching the things you need to teach to be really good at that. And you don't need 4 years of it to make it happen.
And I wish more parents were on board with trades. It's
right.
The biggest challenge we have as homeowners is getting someone to come out reliably to do an estimate and then follow up and do the work. I wish parents would get the head trash out of here that college is the answer. College is debt for most people, and college is a play place for a lot of the students. I mean, I was a student a long time ago. I know what I did in college. You guys know what you did in college too.
Put that in perspective though, Meg, right? You could, when you were going to school, when I was going to school, I don't know about you, Steve, because you're so young and you went to, you know, that other school over there in Michigan.
I did go to that school in Michigan. You
could go and get a summer job and pay for your entire year of school by working hard over the summer.
How long ago was that? How could you get a summer job and pay for your whole year? Like, what?
My first year tuition at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee was less than my last year's tuition at high school.
Well, that's because you're a Wisconsin resident.
Wait, true.
For me.
But you had the opportunity. You had the opportunity. Wow. If you decided to go down a state school route and stay, you could do that back in the late 80s, early 70s, you know, up through the, you know, 60s, 70s into the mid 80s, you could afford to pay for school as you went. You could get most of your summer and then work part-time during the school year to not come out of that.
Yeah. Well, you're a dinosaur and
Yes. Thank you.
That's the reality.
Not the reality anymore. Not even close anymore.
All kidding aside, I worked throughout the school year and summer school and did summer school. So I had a summer job. I had a job through college. I had jobs through high school. So I'm of that generation where that was expected. When my son, who's now 33, was going to high school and college, he also had jobs. It was part and parcel of the requirement of my household. His dad and I were divorced at that point, and he was the fun dad, and I was the all-business mom. And so he had jobs, and his work ethic today is head and shoulders above a lot of the other youngsters. Although I will say he has chosen well through high school and college. His group of friends are equally driven as he is. So it's nice to see his posse, they're all accomplished and successful. They did all go to college, but they're not all doing highly educated, specialized careers. I still wish more kids would go to trade school, though, because we need to keep the economy going. AI, I don't know if you guys are talking about this and what kind of jobs artificial intelligence chatbots are replacing, but it's reality now. working with your hands, fixing a car, using a chainsaw. AI is never going to do that. So
right.
It's like a career where you can't be replaced.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and so the one challenge that I think that much of the industry also needs to think about is, no matter what the trade school is, the 80 students they graduate a year or whatever it might be, there aren't enough of them to create the opportunity to make that happen. So you need, as a business owner, to find a way to bring in that talent separately and have your own development process, have the opportunity to be able to bring talent in that may or may not know anything, and spend the time to be able to develop your own talent to create a deeper pool for everybody else as well, because the education system's not robust enough to bring enough people in to replace what needs to be replaced.
And true to that point, I went yesterday afternoon to get my hair cut at Great Clips, and on the door is a on their door is a sign indicating that Great Clips is now doing apprenticeship programs. So if you have an interest in cosmetology, you can ramp up your certification time by doing an apprenticeship. It's absolutely what I'm hearing here in Wisconsin. Business owners are spending more time bringing in younger people who mm-hmm. they can groom and train in their own way of doing things. I'm working with a woman in Milwaukee who's got a glass business. They do glass overlay and other interesting things with glass. She couldn't for her life find a glazer. Mm-hmm. Now suddenly
would this be Gatsby?
Yeah. So she is training. Yeah, she's doing her own apprenticeship. And
we just saw her yesterday.
With somebody who's not even her own employee. So yes. Talk about going out on a limb. Yeah,
right.
But yeah, Brad, she's got two people on the hook now who may be future employees.
Yeah, because I met her at an event a couple weeks ago, and she was talking about, hey, I need to find this. And she had somebody that was willing, that wasn't in her own business, willing to teach somebody, because there are enough boomer Xers, there are enough people out there that want to share their knowledge, skill, and wisdom with people who are wanting to learn. And I think that's one of the things that business owners need to really understand, is that we got to figure out how to allow them to come in and be curious and ask questions and not set, as we've talked before on the show, Steve, about that level of perfection that's expected. The moment we step into the workforces, everything has to be perfect. Everything has to be exactly right all the time. And there's no room for error, no room for mistake.
Well,
that's
not
reality.
I expect perfection, Brad.
Right.
All the time.
Yeah. And it just doesn't work that way. And we got to allow people to make those errors, and we got to allow business owners that freedom to say it's okay.
I'll also throw in here, one of the issues with trades is antiquated laws in some states. And I'll give you an example. I have locks. You have locks. We all need a locksmith every now and then, because we lock ourselves out of places that we need to get back into like 5 minutes ago. Well, there are certain laws in the books that in order to operate a locksmithing service, you must have a master locksmith under your employment. Mm-hmm. You know how many master locksmiths there are anymore?
Not many.
There are about 5 in the state of Wisconsin. But we all have locks that need to be unlocked. Mm-hmm. And it's getting harder and harder. Even with technology, there are still locks that can't be picked. And you need to call somebody to get there. It's absolutely prohibitive the way that the laws are written, because there aren't any master locksmith programs even anymore.
Right.
So
right.
There's a real disconnect between requirements and regulations and the availability of talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's also just the labor laws that exist for those under 18 on a farm. What you're able to do on a farm, if you're a farmhand, I can use the welder, I can fix the equipment, I can do anything I want on a farm, essentially, from like 12 years old on up. But I try to go work at the garage down the road, or, you know, work for the plumber or whatever. You can't do anything. Okay, well, I can drive a tractor, I can do all the other things, but I can't be a lot jockey at the dealership or do anything like that, because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and it's really tough in a state like Wisconsin, where we've got so many farms and farm kids. Granted, there's a lot of farmland that's coming out of production and farmers who are selling, and generationally that they're moving away from raising their kids with those kinds of skill sets. But for me, that's one of the joys that I have at the end of every day and the weekend. I go play with my chainsaw and my log splitter and drive my slow moving vehicle down the road to go plow. And but we're going to have fewer and fewer of those kids too.
Right.
So Meg, what trends are you seeing in the industry? And let's talk just blue collar space. So what are some trends that you're seeing that you're excited about?
Oh, in the trades, what am I excited about? I'm excited about what I'm doing and getting the word out to drive more kids. And it's not, you know, it's not even kids. You know, I was at an event in Milwaukee and talking to older adults who still have gas in the tank, who've been able to retire from a career, who are now coming back in order to get a trade skill and go out there and start career number two. That was a real eye-opener for me. I thought that was exceptional too, because now you've got the values of somebody who's been out in the working world for a long time, circling back around to do a dirty job.
They're and to that business owner, which is great to solve the need, but if they're not leveraging that individual's ability to teach somebody younger, it's a band-aid and they're still going to be at the same spot they were potentially, right? That's essentially what happened, you know, in 2001, 2002, where all the folks were able to come back in and now they're old enough to get back out. There's still some that can go back in, but if they're not transitioning that knowledge downstream, that owner is going to be in trouble if they're using that person to fill that full-time equivalent and not take the risk of bringing somebody new in to learn behind them. Because it is a short-term window for them. Now, they might be doing it very well, and hey, this is what I got to do, and I'm ready to get out or sell or whatever, transition to their family member could be the opportunity. But that boomer workforce is an untapped workforce for sure of wanting to get back and doing it.
And I'm just realizing you two have your hats on. I should really have my hat on too. I am all about the United States being the number one producer of quality products. And so I don't know what we need to do to get more people into the trades. But America.
Part of it is being open and responding. Right. If you have a young person that's reaching out, respond back to them. Right. If you got an 18-year-old kid coming in your door knocking on saying, hey, I'm looking for a job, and you look at the resume and it doesn't fit the need, doesn't matter. Go talk to them. Go figure it out. Right. Go have a conversation, because we have to open up our doors as an industry if we want them to come. Because we've told them for two decades, you're not good enough. We can't find good people. You've got people willing to come in. You need to invite them into your house, and show them around and figure it out.
And that used to drive me crazy when I owned Great Clips a long time ago. The number of people, mostly women, who were coming in with low self-esteem because they were told, oh, honey, you could be so much more than a beautician. What is wrong? What is wrong with these parents that are then demeaning their kid, the morale of the kid, to go into a profession where then they have a lack of self-esteem and stick-to-itiveness? To your point, Brad, if they want to do it, let them do it, because financially, they're probably going to be financially independent sooner than a kid who comes out strapped with loans. But maybe the government will forgive those loans.
Hey, back off. Stop. Not a political show, Meg. Brad's out of time.
Brad's going to pay for it with his taxes. It's okay.
Yeah.
Taxes are a privilege, just so you know. It's a privilege for being successful.
It is. There is that.
Yes, that's what keeps the country going too. So have helped to support those who have not. Not arguing with the tax system. I'm just saying, when it comes to graduating from a program, those kids who are graduating with no college debt, who are graduating from a trade, are going to be financially viable. A whole different mindset towards money as well.
Yep.
Some of them who are getting tips and socking that money away. But then there are a lot of them who get the tips and say it's cash. I'm going to go Friday afternoon and go get myself a six-pack beer. And it's real money that's going towards something that right. is entertaining them. But it's real money.
It's all real money. So, Meg, two things. First, how do people find you, get a hold of you, if they're looking for opportunities or want to understand what that franchise world looks like or want to be part of your organizations in some way,
shape, or form? Easiest way to find
me. How do people find you? Where do they get a hold of you?
I don't know where your audience hangs out, but I'm pretty discoverable on LinkedIn as Meg Schmitz. I've also got a website where I've got a podcast and a blog and do a lot of writing and recording to put content out there about opportunities. Franchising isn't for everybody, but a lot of people are curious about business ownership. So that's meg@megschmitz.com. Or you can just call me, frankly. I love it when I do a show and put my phone number out there and people actually call it because they're unafraid. 847-302-2601. Send me a text and say you heard me here on the No right. Yes Show.
This is all. Never mind. I'm not going to go.
Don't go there.
No, we're not going to go there.
We're not going there.
So the other question I have for you, Meg, if you look back on your ownership as a business owner, right? You've owned a lot of different things over the course of life. You're entering some new things here as well. If you could go back and if you know what you knew now and able to tell yourself what you didn't know then, what piece of advice would you give yourself entering into the entrepreneurial world?
Yeah, I was lying. You don't know this, but I was lying awake in the middle of the night from about 3 to 5 o'clock this morning with a business issue. And I finally said to myself, why are you so wound up about this? You've done it a million times. You're a legitimate business owner with experience. So I've run into a little bit of a snafu, but in the middle of the night, it's like this great big brick wall that I can't get around. You're going to survive. The thing that I wish I had been able to embrace years ago is it's not going to kill you and it's not going to break your business. There are things that will, but if you recognize what's happening and address it sooner, you're going to save yourself a lot of time and effort and heartbreak. So recognize when things are going sideways, get yourself a good coach, and don't sweat it. You'll probably be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Some solid advice.
Right. That was an unsolicited plug from Meg Schmitz, just so you know.
Yep.
We didn't know what the answer was going to be, but thank you for that, Meg, because you are right. It's finding that support system around you to go forward, and whatever that support system needs to look like is really, really important. And we put this show out here to help be part of that solution.
Yeah. I don't care whether you're an entrepreneur or not, get yourself a good posse, be part of a team, surround yourself with like-minded people. If you're positive, get rid of the negatives. Mm-hmm. We all need a mentor and we all need a network. Rising tides lift all boats.
Yeah. So
do yourself a favor and as an entrepreneur, don't keep it in. Get out there and really see how other people are tackling problems, because you'll survive and thrive much better than if you're just trying to do it on your own.
Awesome. Meg, thank you so much for being on the show today. We really appreciate you being here and looking forward and seeing your maybe some posts with your three chainsaws and all the fun things you're doing on your slow moving vehicles.
Thank you so much. I was looking forward to this conversation. You surprised me with a couple of the questions and the pivots, but it's been very enjoyable to spend the afternoon here with you too.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Blue Collar BS, brought to you by Vision Forward Business Solutions and Professional Business Coaching, Inc. If you'd like to learn more on today's topic, just reach out to Steve Doyle or myself, Brad Herta. Please like, share, rate, and review this show, as feedback is the only way we can get better. Let's keep blue-collar businesses strong for generations to come.